Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
I'm Fran and you're listening to Industry Experts, brought to you by Vox Markets. This podcast series features in-depth discussions with leaders and pioneers on their chosen sectors. The World Economic Forum has previously said that with our current rate of progress, it will likely take around 200 years to reach gender parity. Today, we speak to female entrepreneur Zara Nanu, who founded her company Gap Square in direct opposition to these sorts of findings and statistics. Combining technology with diversity, Gap Square uses machine learning to support organizations complying the Equality Act of 2010. Analyzing their gender pay gap and subsequently flagging opportunities to close them as they arise. Not only is Zara paving the way for societal justice within the workspace, but she's also a perfect demonstration of how more women are increasingly infiltrating, innovating, and changing perspective within the traditionally male-dominated field of IT and technology. Before we get into the intricacies of your company, Gap Square, which is using AI to address the gender pay gap, where the ultimate goal is to close this permanently, I think it'd be great if you could enlighten our listeners on the current state of this gap, because I feel even though it's a simple question, it's something that is probably overlooked just in its simplicity. So I think it's really good to address exactly what it is and what the current state of it is.
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. So currently, the gender pay gap globally is at about 60%. And when we talk about the gender pay gap, we mean the average differences between the pay for men and pay for women. It's different than equal pay, because when we look at equal pay, that's the difference in pay between men and women for the same job with the same skills. We're talking more about comparing an average man in a company to an average woman in a company and understanding the differences between those two. So the World Economic Forum estimates that currently that gender pay gap is at 60%, and they equally estimate it will be about 217 years to close that gap if we continue on the same trajectory as we've been going in the past few years. Like I said, it's about comparing averages. And what usually the gender pay gap highlights is the fact that we have more women in lower paid jobs within a company and more men in higher paid jobs within a company. And this is where the two averages differ significantly.
Right. And when you look at this, what the WEF says about it taking over 200 years to close this gap, you know, what do you think about this? Because I know that your company is driving data insights, and you say that you're doing this in the same way that technology is looking at the way we travel, so driverless cars, or the way we communicate. So you have a very fair point of why not use this exact technology to tackle inequality as well. So, you know, what is the kind of response when you say you want to tackle this in a fraction of what they've estimated in these reports?
Well, I think, like you said, that's absolutely right. As a society, we currently use technology to make advancements in a lot of different areas of our life. And the same World Economic Forum is saying that by 2030, we will be on our way to the red planet and we will be in self-driving cars, but we will still be 200 years away from closing the gender pay gap. For the past 3 years, we've been using data to look at pay equality within companies, and we know how important data is in highlighting key pinch points that can help make progress faster. Just as a small example, for instance, we have a current company has nearly 50,000 employees using our software. And just by looking at the different elements of pay, and they have around 500 different elements of pay, they've been able to identify what elements of pay are more in favor of men than women, restructure those elements of pay, and make significant impact on that difference between men and women quite quickly. Now, this is kind of short-term solutions that can be identified through the data really fast. And then we talk about more long-term solutions that are around closing occupational segregation gaps that mean that some women are more clustered into certain roles and men are clustered into other roles, or ensuring a faster career progression for women within a company or more recruitment of women within certain roles. Those can take slightly longer time, but again, through data, companies can understand how quickly they need to act on these and when they're going to start to provide results.
Right. So you're using these statistics to form gender equality. So you're really focusing on the facts and the science here, clearly. You know, what are the main benefits of this data-driven approach then, especially in comparison to something that has the disadvantage of being subjective?
Well, the main example, I think, it's really difficult. We're talking about changing culture, and it's really difficult to change culture around equality and diversity because it can sometimes be a very emotional issue. It can be a very political issue. So usually what ends up happening within a company, you get a lot of debate, you get a lot of conversation, and perhaps some actions that don't necessarily reap the necessary results. Whereas bringing in data, what we've seen, helps focus management attention on specific issues that can be addressed within the short time or within a medium to long term period of time. So that they can actually move away from the political and move away from the emotional into this agenda where what gets measured, gets done, gets implemented, brings results.
Right. So in the UK government report, they said that the strategy is all about moving the dial on equalising pay by de-biasing these systems, not people. So I guess that's exactly what you're trying to target.
Absolutely. I mean, we all have biases within us. And when we look at data, and currently within GapSquare, we have data for over 300,000 employees in the UK, and we see how biased the data is in itself, in terms of presence of women in certain types of roles, presence of women in flexible or part-time roles or job shares, presence of women in different types of occupations. So the biases run across a holistic number of areas, but data does help bring them all together and focus people's attention on specific changes.
Right. So, you know, how do you go about defining this kind of realignment? Is it a case of redefining the gap as a kind of management issue? Is that where the appeal lies, do you think, for most organizations? Where this knowledge is lacking or overlooked?
Yes, so it is redefining it as a management issue. And what we also know is that not a lot of people who work in HR are necessarily statisticians or necessarily diversity and inclusion experts or, you know, behavioral economists. This is why we embed a lot of this knowledge into our software so that it can provide insights straight away to someone who doesn't necessarily know, well, how do I address this? It seems like a mountain. How do I get a percentage of women in our company from 17% to 30% within the next, you know, 5 years? That can seem like a big, massive task for someone in HR. And we bring in the insights and narratives within our software that helps explain step by step what kind of actions can lead to that change and can lead to those numbers. So we're moving into that area.
Right. Really interesting that you said this kind of narrative. I know that they've sort of pinpointed this, having a narrative along with your data, as pretty essential for addressing the gap in general. I guess it's quite easy for companies to see these annual reports as a bit of a deterrent and a bit of a burden that's maybe looking out to kind of humiliate those that have this gap quite obviously very wide and within these institutions. But like you said, I guess it's reframing this as an opportunity, right? So it's a process to gain insight and then using that to structure and reculture the company, right?
Yeah. I mean, we have seen that there was some thinking at the beginning when the gender pay gap legislation came in requiring companies with 250 people or more to report on the gender pay gap and specifically on six indicators around pay and bonuses. A lot of people did see them as a burden, as an additional kind of tick box exercise. So in year one, we've had over 90% of companies in the UK came out and reported a gender pay gap. Most of them reported a pay gap as expected, and everybody thought, oh, okay, it's just a tick box exercise. From now on, we just report these numbers every year. But what is happening is a lot of the stakeholders, a lot of women who are looking for jobs or women who work for these companies are now starting to question their employers around what's going to happen next. You have shown me a gender pay gap of 20%. What is happening next year or the year after that or the year after that? So right. It's actually becoming more than just a legislative burden. It's becoming a change maker in itself. And there was this research that came out of Harvard, I think it was last week, that was saying that companies that are forced to report on the gender pay gap actually report progress on the agenda. So ultimately, this kind of burden does lead to making change and embedding that change within organizational culture.
Right. And is that in terms of smaller companies and private companies as well? Do you think that that is a deterrent for them by providing this data? And do you are you helping and working with all of these companies, ranging from private to public to large to small?
We work with different size companies, and one of our pieces of software available online is a free tool that allows companies to calculate their reporting requirements as per legislation for free. So they can just go in and find out all of their numbers free of charge. And we've designed that specifically with smaller companies in mind that might not have the budget or the remit to do this kind of work, but maybe want to already start taking action. We're based in Bristol, and we actually have seen quite a lot of companies in Bristol use that free software. Companies with 100, 150 employees that are planning to grow and scale in the next few years and are actually wanting to see where they are now and how can they ensure that they grow in a way that is fair, attracts diverse talent, and retains that talent within the company. So a lot of smaller companies are really open-minded to this and are actually being very proactive in terms of how they can address the gender pay gap early.
Right. And seeing as in the last 2 years, firms who have over 250 employees have to publish figures, they're obliged to. Is it fair to say then that the rest of the UK workforce, which make up smaller companies, often go without knowledge of exactly what their workplace's gap is and how it's measured?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And I know that there's a big push from some people in government to extend this legislation to companies with 100 employees or more. So I think within the next 5 years, we might see that. As a company that does data analysis, we know that there are more kind of issues that arise from lowering the number of employees when you start looking at averages, because people start to become more identifiable, and therefore it becomes more difficult to keep it as an average kind of comparison between men and women within the organization if you lower it down significantly. We'll have to keep an eye out and see what happens in the next few years. It could be that we believe that we're moving actually in that space, because millennials and Generation X and Y are generations that are very much interested in transparency. They want to know how much they get paid compared to their colleagues. They want to make sure that their colleagues get paid fairly. And as we move into this world where employees want to know what is happening at different pay levels, I think we're going to start seeing more and more transparency and companies disclosing this information without even having to for regulatory purposes.
Right. And do you think when we reach that stage that it will be possible to work towards a more uniform approach when we're looking at all these companies as a whole?
I absolutely think so. I think transparency increases productivity, increases trust that employees have within their company, and therefore everybody kind of starts working together more, producing more for the company, returning higher results in terms of revenues and earnings. So it is a world that we're moving towards.
Right. And as for the current state, you know, what these kind of challenges, you know, what are you seeing, for instance, these small companies now, you know, is it about how you approach these data insights? Is it different because smaller companies may be more sensitive to change within these statistics? So, you know, if you're working part-time or the employment levels are constantly changing, how does that affect how Gap Square is working with this data?
So we tend to look at data from different angles. So we look at data from the point of view of company sizes, we look at data from the point of view of your occupations, geographies, so that we can provide more insights to the company that's looking at that data, regardless of their size, so that they can understand, is it an occupational segregation thing? Is it an issue around more women doing part-time work? Is it an issue around the glass ceiling when it comes to female career progression and promotion within the company? So we bring a lot of these data points together so that we can provide a more holistic response to these questions for companies of any sizes that are looking at their data. And when that happens, this is when they can start to take more meaningful action to address those gaps. We see some companies already focusing their action on kind of programs for female returners into employment, programs for encouraging flexible working. But sometimes they just need to look at the data and understand, is that what's needed, or do we need to focus our resources and attention actually on recruitment, or do we need to focus our attention on a specific level in a department where past which women seem to have a hard time rising.
Right. Yeah. So twofold. I mean, reflecting on your own company against this backdrop, like you said, you know, you're a female leader in the tech industry and your software is working to close the gap on the data side, but then you yourself also represent this potential, you know, more integration of females into sectors that are traditionally male-led. You know, these two must be linked very closely. You know, surely more female involvement will help narrow the gap further or prevent it widening at least. You know, how do you see these alongside each other?
Absolutely. I mean, in looking at the aggregated data that we have in Gap Square, I see that occupational segregation plays a very important role in the gender pay gap. So occupational segregation is when we think about certain roles as more pertinent to one gender and other roles more pertinent to another gender. And the reason it's important when we talk about the gender pay gap is that occupations that are dominated by men pay more per hour than occupations that are dominated by women. And a lot of newly emerging tech roles are occupations that are dominated by men. There was this report that came out at the end of last year around the gender pay gap, specifically looking at women in artificial intelligence. And the gender pay gap there is 3 times higher than the average gender pay gap in the UK. And a lot of it is due to the fact that we have very few women working in this space. And it's a space that's actually shaping our future and shaping the way we're going to do medicine, we're going to do education, we're going to do care. And it's currently being developed by young white Californians. And we need to make sure that we bring in a lot of female talent into this so that we can think about it more holistically and think about all of these developments from different points of view. As a woman in tech, I know how difficult of a sector it is when it is more male dominated because of the way it is structured and because of the way you sometimes just don't feel like you fit in because you go into a meeting or you go into a networking event and you're sometimes the only woman there. So it's important to break these barriers and ensure we get more women into the sector, both for the sake of ensuring we develop technology that is fit for all, but also from the point of view that it can ensure that the gender pay gap narrows and we have more fairness in pay when it comes to the tech sector.
Right. Well put. And just leading on from that, you know, where do you see the pay gap as most vulnerable currently? And what do you think are the common variables for this state now? You know, is this maybe a reflection of public versus private sectors? You know, what can we do now? And what are the kind of most obvious variables that need to change?
So there are different indicators that point to the gender pay gap. So I've mentioned occupational segregation, but we also have things like part-time working and flexible working. And many of us take flexible working for granted because we have jobs that allow us to use technology and work from different parts of the day, from different parts of the world, from home, from office, from a cafe. What our data shows is that these flexible roles are usually linked to mid-management and stop to exist once you go higher up the career ladder. Once you get into more senior roles, the expectation is that you will be in the office not only 40 hours a week, but actually 60 hours a week, and that's the time you will put in. So it's about looking at this data and understanding, is this a culture that actually that company wants to foster? There's emerging research actually that shows that the more hours an employee puts in the company, the less the productivity and the less the outputs coming out of that employee. So at the end of the day, nobody has to benefit from that. And ensuring flexible working and part-time working are key to closing the gender pay gap across both genders. This is not something that appeals only to women. Flexible working and part-time working increasingly appeals to men too, who want to do something beyond their career and beyond their job in their lives. Another thing is around recruitment and career progression and how HR departments think about it. We still have ingrained stereotypes about what a leader looks like and what someone who needs to be promoted into a head of department looks like. So it's about how do we then look at all of these factors from a different point of view and rethink promotion and rethink hiring into different roles that reflects the current population and the current generations.
Right. And when we're talking about Gap Square and the software in particular, you know, what are going to be the most essential insurance policies and variables to ensure that the software and the message and the aims are eventually carried through and implemented to achieve this goal of decreasing this gap, you know, from 200 plus years to what it's been stated in WEF to, you know, a fraction of that?
Yeah, so ultimately, when somebody comes and uses Gap Square together with us, we start working together by having access to their data and identifying key pinch points that can help us accelerate that agenda. So they become, in effect, our partners in moving this agenda forward. And that's what makes it very exciting, because we engage in using that data to help everyone learn from each other, pick up best practice, pick up what works, and move together and into that space where we can close the gender pay gap, not in 217 years, but actually within the next 17, 20 years.
Right, perfect. And I noticed that on your website, you know, you singled out this piece of information from the UK government report, which basically says that employers who use high quality data to understand the drivers of this gap will be able to target their actions and then deliver the most effective results. You know, do you have any reflections on this in line with what Gap Square is trying to do?
We have absolutely seen that. So over the past 3 years, we've had about 150 companies look at their data through Gap Square, and we can confidently say that about 90% of them have been able to make positive change and lower the gender pay gap while using the software. And we see the benefits of digging deep into your data, identifying key pinch points, and taking decisions that can help companies get to their objectives faster. And the companies that get to their objectives faster are able to attract top talent, retain their female talent, and build companies that work for all.
When we're talking about an annual report of these companies, you know, giving their information once a year, do you think that's effective, doing it annually, or do you think we can do more to drive the consistency of this to become more frequent? You know, do you think change is going to reflect it through this persistent logging?
Yeah, I mean, the companies that are still doing it just for the purpose of reporting still do it only once a year. But what we see through Gap Square is that companies that are interested in monitoring change and creating some change before it's time to come up with the numbers again, they use our software monthly or quarterly in order to understand progress, understand what actions that they have implemented over the past quarter have started to generate results so that they can replicate that good practice and scale that good practice within their company and be ahead of the competition. And that's absolutely working.
You know, something which may be considered quite a niche organization from you, but something which is of such critical value, in closing this gap. What have you seen the reception and the following been like for Gap Square? Do you think a lot of companies are turning to building similar softwares or confronting this gap with a greater willingness?
We have definitely seen a lot of interest, particularly from larger companies. So companies that have over 20,000 employees are actually more keen to take specific action and see how they can use software to address the gaps, understand the gaps, because they've been historically over the past 10, 15 years looking at data anyways in order to make business change and take business decisions. And it's really interesting and fascinating to see how quickly they are adapting those strategies that using data for business decisions to now using data for decisions around talent, diversity, and inclusion. So it's a trend that's here to stay. And we think the more software there is and the more technology there is that's developed out there to help companies advance this agenda, the better off we're all going to be.
Right. I completely agree. And just as we're reflecting, you know, if you have any overarching insights that you want to give to our listeners, you know, about where the value really is here and what we have to do to all get on board and remember that, you know, an annual report doesn't mean it happens once a year. It's an ongoing issue. You know, what reflection would you say to anyone who's listening?
I think most of the people who are listening would agree that by 2030, when we're on the way to the red planet or following on TV, people that are going to the red planet or driving around in our self-driving cars, we'd want to know that we have achieved some kind of pay parity and equality in pay for men and women or for people of different ethnic backgrounds. And data is a key to making that happen. It's key to moving away from emotional and moving away from the political of this agenda into what can we actually specifically do to better our society and therefore create a better world for us and for our children. So I think that's the key message to take away from this.
I agree. I think it's really important to get away from that subjectivity and that political shift that is so common, and just focus on equality, yes, but then it's not just a societal issue. It's increasing the size of the economy. It's a uniform result, isn't it? And it's going to benefit all of us.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.